And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's the little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Visit DirecTV.com. High-speed internet service required. Terms and restrictions apply.
So, like, I didn't even know that it was his birthday on that day. So it was funny because when I called him, he's, Do it again. I love this song. Bam, bam, bam. Hang on. Bam, bam.
Good morning, sweet world, and welcome to the No Dunks Podcast on the Athletic Network. It's Monday, January 15th, 2024. I'm J.E. Skeets here in the Classic Factory, wishing you a meaningful MLK Day. Alongside me, as always, Tass Mellis.
Podcast listeners, this is for you.
Next to him, it's the bearded woman, Tasha Hot Boy, Trey Kirby.
Hey-o!
Hey-o! And over yonder, the man making the magic happen, super producer, JD.
Hello.
There he is. And here we are. Shout out to the stream team joining us live right now on YouTube. Smash that like button. Subscribe to No Dunks. Tell a friend about No Dunks. Comment away in the stream team. Podcast listeners, leave your boys a 5-star rating and review. We are here on a Monday to do the winners and losers of the NBA weekend. We jump right into the winners because we've got a lot to talk about. And we got to pick everything from Sunday's Kings-Bucks game as a winner of the weekend. Especially Damian Lillard doing a little Dame time on Sunday, swishing a three-pointer at the buzzer in overtime to give the Bucks the stunning 143-142 victory over the Kings. Man, the Kings were up, what, 4 late in overtime, and then Brook Lopez made a 3 in the corner, and then you had Fox missing one of the free throws. You had Monk also missing free throws. They let the door open. Then they doubled Giannis on the inbounds there. Maybe a poor decision. Maybe that's the one guy you want to have the ball, court. Up two, but instead, Dame throws it into Brooke. Brooke gives it back to Dame, and Dame pulls up and does what Damian Lillard does, splashing a very difficult, 30-footer at the buzzer. What a shot.
Sort of difficult.
Well, sort of difficult. Sort of.
For Dame, not that difficult.
No,
loved afterwards, you mentioned Skeets. He hit the Dame time celly. Afterwards, he's like, my teammates have been asking me, how come you haven't brought out Dame time? I said it wasn't necessary.
Right.
Tonight, it was necessary, and it absolutely was. That was awesome by Lillard. Definitely a what-a-free-throws-do-win games type of game. You mentioned the Kings were up by 4 with 33 seconds left in overtime. They blew it. That's after the Bucks led by 5 with 52 seconds left in regulation, and they blew it.
Mm-hmm.
Just make one free throw, either of these teams, and you win the game here. And then, yeah, you're right. Maybe they should have let Giannis catch the ball on the inbounds, but on the previous play, he had just taken the ball, ran right down the court, and found Brooke Lopez for a 3 in the corner, so he probably rampages to the hoop and ties it up. But you'll have to play another overtime if that's the case. But just awesome stuff. This is a fun game, Shout out to my stepbrother. He texted me during this one. He's like, this is a fun game.
Mm.
So I had to hop in because I was locked in on the Lions right there. You got to see the first playoff victory in 30-something years. So I hopped over in just enough time to see Dame rip the Kings' hearts out.
Yeah. It was great to see Chris Middleton in that plaid. He came out because he wasn't playing. Came out over and celebrated with Damian Lillard. Everybody's celebrating with Damian Lillard. I guess the Kings were confused because in regulation, Dame had another chance to try and win the game, but he had far less time to get the shot off. So maybe the Kings thought that, they don't have a lot of time. So if we just double Giannis, things will work out. Then going into to overtime, I turned it off when Pat Connaughton went to the free throw line with 18 seconds left. The Bucks were up 4. I thought it was over, but he missed a couple free throws, so I shut it off. I was done. I thought we were going to be reading headlines about the Bucks just can't play defense, that kind of thing, because the Bucks literally gave this game away at the end of regulation with a couple missed free throws, with other things happening, but the Kings just fought back.
Kings coach Mike Brown ejected in the 4th after storming onto the court, screaming at the referees, And, you know, he had to be restrained by Malik Monk and Sacramento players and other coaches. And then, because he had some time to work with back in the locker room, in his post-game news conference, Mike Brown broke out the laptop. He showed up with receipts and went on an epic rant about the officiating and how they were inconsistent. And he's pointing out particular plays where Dame got a call, but Fox didn't, and so on. I mean, we are just the year of 2024, the year of the coach's rant right now, coming on the heels of Darko. And now Mike Brown in this 5 minute, you know, clip that you're seeing, very calm, I will say. You know, Darko was fiery, mm-hmm. but very hilarious with the laptop. And, you know, the fine is coming for this man as well.
Oh, man, worth it. $25K. You can already see how happy the Kings players were. Monk is, like, laughing and giggling as he's helping escort Mike Brown off the court when he got kicked out. Yep. And then to see Mike Brown completely go in on the referees afterwards, I thought it was awesome. If you're a Kings fan, if you're a Kings player, you're like, that's my coach. I'll do anything for that guy. And like you're saying, the complete opposite end of the spectrum from Darko Rajakovic's rant. He was angry. I felt like Mike Brown was like theatrical.
Oh, yeah.
He was performing. His giant hand motions were completely filling the frame. Anthony Slater, great cinematography. The slow zooms onto the laptop so you can actually see where the fouls are. He's doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And he made a compelling case.
Yeah.
Like, these are pretty minor calls that he's talking about. Like, the placement of Fox's hand on Dame Lillard, or campaign hooking Fox's arm, the way Domantas Sabonis challenges a shot with his forearm and it was okay for Brook Lopez to do it. Like, you have to actually see the footage to know what he's talking about and to kind of understand why he even got tossed, because it looked like hardly anything happened in real time when he got the boot. But I was on Mike Brown's side with this one. It was awesome.
It was the clip. He's like looking right at the camera.
It's
like
perfect.
Talking to each and every one of us. He's not really talking, it feels like, to the reporters. Yeah. He's like talking to us or to Silver and to the Referee Association.
Right.
So maybe that adds to the theatrics of it all.
Yeah, I guess Darko Rajakovic was sort of the opening act, and Mike Brown wanted to close this baby because it seemed like he was absolutely trying to sell it. Shout out to the video coordinator for the Sacramento Kings, Depeche Mystery. As Mike Brown got in here, he said, "Hey, Dip, give me that computer." And he brought out the computer that Depeche Mystery just recently had showed him and cut everything. That was the thing that Rajakovic was lacking, I guess, the video. But it was a bunch of small few plays, and they asked Malik Monk, like, "What the hell happened? How did Mike Brown get tossed?" And he just said, "I guess they're bad calls. They're just bad calls, but you can't go into the details like we tried to here on the show without the video." So shout out to Mike Brown.
Yeah.
Golden Globe. He's going to win an award, I think.
He was just pissed off about why is it called on one end and it's not called on the other. You're not calling it consistently. And then he even is going so far as saying, like, we've asked about this whole verticality, two hands up. Can I have one hand down like a forearm? And they keep telling us basically different things. That's also, you can tell, pissing him and his staff off. Like, every time we ask about this, you sort of get one answer and then they call it another way. So you can see why he's frustrated. Lost in the Kings collapse was a good performance from once benched guard Kevin Huerter. He had a good game. 26 points, 10 of 14 shooting, 6 threes. He hit a big one there, a clutch deep three that, you know, should have given Sacramento maybe the lead for good in overtime. But, you know, this guy wasn't playing a lot, and for him to get going, it was nice. This was a fun, fun game, both the 53 minutes they played on the floor and then continuing with Mike Brown in the post-game press conference. You would assume, I guess, is he just going to get another 25K, like Darko got? Is that that's what the going rate is for a coach's rant, I assume?
Must be, yeah.
Yeah, it just stinks because the refs decide, oh, you're touching a guy on defense, you're out. But you can't do anything on defense anymore, so you're allowed to touch.
Yeah,
I think you should be allowed to. But that's what Mike Brown was pointing out. Sometimes you let us touch, sometimes you don't. It really didn't make any sense, but I'm thankful we got that.
Well, he would have been probably kicked out in overtime if he was still there, because there was a play. It was early in overtime, but Fox got hit on the arm on a three-pointer shot, and it like came up like 3 feet short, and he's looking right away. And even the broadcast of Bucks broadcast is like, yeah, I think Dame got away with sort of getting them there on the arm. So they missed that one, but still, Sacramento should have won the game. Like, they got back into it, and they had the game, and if they could have just... Like, Monk is like a... Is he like an 85% free throw shooter? It was weird to see him miss two.
Yeah.
It's a, you know, it doesn't matter how good you are at the line. You see guys that are money at the line miss one of two, like Fox did, and he's not even nearly as good as Monk is at the line. That was strange, and he had missed a couple even more in the game.
I thought we were going to get some more referee coaches fighting, even with Mike Brown out of there, because Jordy Fernandez is a pretty vocal guy for the Kings. Yeah. I saw Jay Trano, my Canadian idol, sitting there on the Kings bench, too. I thought they wanted to fight a little bit, because the coaching was just... I mean, sorry, the refereeing was a little odd.
Just quick trivia question as we wrap up this game. Damian Lillard, that shot, the buzzer beater, Dame Time, was his 2,500th three-pointer of his career. What a way to get that. Can you name the four guys in NBA history that have more threes made than our guy, Damian Lillard?
Stephen Curry.
That's correct.
He's number one.
Reggie Miller.
Number four.
Ray Allen.
Number two.
And
so
number
Korver?
Three
Terry?
Is Vince Carter?
No.
Jason not Terry. Korver, not Terry.
No. LeBron?
No.
Who is number three?
Current player, though.
I used to know this.
It's
James Harden?
Yeah.
Wow. Bingo. James Harden has 2,845 three-pointers made.
All of them are step-backs.
It's crazy.
100% step-backs.
All right, let's keep it going here. Tass, who do you got for a winner of the weekend?
Oh, we can talk about some more referee versus coach problems here. I got the Utah Jazz. Remember the teams that they beat last week? The Raptors and the Lakers. Obviously, we remember the Raptors, Darko Rajakovic yelling about the refereeing. But the Jazz beat up on both of those teams this weekend. The Raps, I think, still found a way to smile. I'll get to that in a sec. On Friday, Pascal Siakam came back. No, he has not been traded yet. So he was back for the Raptors against the Jazz. And the Jazz were a problem. They crushed the Raptors with 145 points. Just the way they move the ball and get wherever they want. They had the Raps defense moving all over the place. So they were getting into the lane 58-32 in the paint. That's a huge, huge discrepancy. And maybe it was the Raptors' last game of a six-game road trip. Maybe they're a little tired. They're ready to go home and watch the back-to-back of the Lakers versus Jazz the next day, because it was exciting. They played the Lakers on Saturday. The Raps must have loved this. The Jazz shot 39 free throws while the Lakers only had 24 in that game. Okay, smile first, number one for Darko Rajakovic. And then it was just an alley-oop party for the Jazz in this one. Lauri Markkanen got one from Keontae George. Kelly Olynyk, the Canadian, found Ochai Agbaji. Colin Sexton from Jordan Clarkson. They were literally just dunking on the Lakers. I liked how John Collins pulled Anthony Davis out of the paint where he likes to defend. So that just kind of helped everything. The Jazz have won 5 in a row and 11 of 13. And then another little jab for Darko Rajakovic and the Raptors here. I think the Raptors must love this, because the Jazz, they struggled to start the season, 10-18. A big reason was Talen Horton-Tucker was their starting point guard. They just couldn't find anything with him, just like at the end of the last season. So they put him to the bench, and then they took him out of the entire rotation, and that's why they've gotten so good recently. Talen Horton-Tucker is a former Laker. He could be a Toronto Raptor. Do you remember Kyle Lowry? He was up for trade with the Raptors, and the Lakers said, no, we're not giving you Talen Horton-Tucker for Kyle Lowry. Well, that was a mistake. He ended up going to Miami. Now the Lakers are so desperate for a guard. They could have Kyle Lowry standing there. So I think the Raptors were just happy to see the way the Jazz have come out and play. They're 10-18 to start.
Raptors are happy for the Jazz. Crazy winner.
Well, the Raptors have problems with Lakers. This is just Raps. Little jabs about everything. Laker. Anything. They could have Kyle Lowry, so it's going to be interesting to see what they're going to do here. 3.5 weeks left, but no Talen Horton-Tucker. Started, then went to the bench. They're 10-18 to start this season. They're 11-2 since. They're freaking phenomenal. The Utah Jazz are great, and I wonder what they do with their guards, specifically about their guards, because Keontae George was great against the Lakers. The Rook, 19 versus them, coming off the bench. They're not trading him, but behind or in front of him is Colin Sexton, who's starting, and then Jordan Clarkson as well. So I just wonder if teams looking for guards may be able to pluck one of those guys away from the Utah Jazz, who are freaking rolling.
I would imagine it's Clarkson who is available, because the Jazz season turned when they started starting Colin Sexton. They're 14-4 with Sexton in the starting lineup. He's putting up 21 a game, 5 assists, shooting 51 from the field, 39 from 3, and 90 at the line. 50-40-90 from Colin Sexton, basically out of nowhere. He also brings an intensity and a drive, I think, that you don't necessarily get from Jordan Clarkson, and definitely not from Talen Horton-Tucker. So him coming into the starting lineup has been huge, which means He's also younger, you know, than Jordan Clarkson, so I assume Clarkson would be the guy that would most likely be going out. The other thing that happened for the Jazz is that Lauri Markkanen came back after his injury, and this guy's been awesome. He completely outplayed Anthony Davis in the win over the Lakers. 29 points, 9 rebounds, 5 assists for Lauri Markkanen. Anthony Davis went for 15 points on 5 of 21 shooting, with Markkanen mainly the guy guarding him. Yeah. That was really impressive from Lowry.
Jazz, 21-20. They are in the 9th spot right now in the Western Conference. So that's in the play-in. They're above the Rockets. They're not far behind the Suns. And, yeah, more importantly, the Lakers and Warriors are still out of the actual play-in tournament, sitting at 11th and 12th, respectively. So Utah Jazz, yeah, well-deserved winner of the weekend. TK, who you got?
Dwayne Wade gets a winner of the weekend. He was on hand for Heat Hornets on Sunday night. They were honoring him for making the Hall of Fame over the summer. And then Pat Riley came through, handed him a bobblehead, and then surprised him with a statue announcement. Apparently, Wade will be getting an 8-foot-tall bronze statue in fall of 2024. It'll be the first statue outside the Heat's arena. They're using the same artist as the MJ statue, the Dirk, Shaq, Kareem. Same dude has done all of them. And then there's like a second collaborator in there who did like some soccer statues as well. As long as it's not the Cristiano Ronaldo guy, should be good. But I love seeing Wade. He was crying. He seemed legitimately surprised that this was the case. He talked about when he was a kid, how cool it was for him to be able to go and visit the Michael Jordan statue in Chicago. Now he's the guy outside the Heat that families will be coming to visit. That's really, really cool. I also saw after the game, the Heat got the win, and Wade was on stage with DJ Khaled singing Poison by Bell Biv DeVoe. Looks like a great night. Looks like a great night for Miami, and Miami had a really solid weekend as well. A couple of wins on Friday. They beat the Magic 99-96. Yeah. The rare victory under 100 points. Bam was great in this one. 21 points, 11 rebounds, 7 assists. He hit the eventual game winner, though Paolo Banchero had 2 nice looks at a shot that would have, I think, tied the game at that point for the Magic. He had a layup he missed. It bounced right back to him. He looked kind of shocked that it had happened, and somehow he shot it backwards because he never really had possession of the ball. On Sunday, the Heat completely spanked the Hornets. Bam went for 24, 10 rebounds, and 7 assists again. Yeah. Miami lost Jaime Jaquez Jr. to a strained groin, which is bad for them because they've got a lot of injuries right now, and he's allegedly going to be a dunk contest guy, so I don't know if a strained groin is what you want a month ahead of the dunk contest, but still, a couple of nice wins for the Heat. They're in a 4-way tie for 4th in the Eastern Conference. The Cavs are 22-15, so they're technically ahead with regards to win percentage, but then the Heat, Pacers, and Knicks are all 23-16. So my question to you guys, those 4 teams seem like they're going to be in the mix for the 4th seed in the Eastern Conference. Cavs, Heat, Pacers, Knicks. Who takes it? Who takes that 4th seed?
It's Knicks for me. I think they have a legitimate shot at catching the 76ers for even the 3 seed. So I would say that they're going to do it. And that's tough because, yeah, the Magic have dropped down to the 8th seed just because they have a tough West Coast trip. Tough road trip, I should say. So it's deep. That East is deep.
Knicks is a good pick, and I'm high on them as well. But, man, the Heat, like you say, they pick up an injury to another key guy, and it's like any other team I'd be freaking out and be like, oh, they're in trouble. The Heat, I think the opposite. I'm like, oh, that's going to make them stronger. Some other guy like you barely hear of is going to slot in there and suddenly start putting up huge numbers. So they're doing all of this without Jimmy. Like you said, Jimmy's played like 1 game in like the last whatever it is.
Yeah.
20 it feels like or something. It's like a long time.
I think he's maybe back tonight.
Is he?
I think that might be the case.
And that's just pretty incredible. Like this is their Bam's been amazing. I mean, the numbers that guy's putting up consistently is huge, and then, you know, hero scoring and all that, everybody contributing, but that is their go-to guy. That is their dog, and they're still winning at 23-16 first in the Southeast. So Knicks or Heat, it'll be a nice little battle. I'd like to see those two teams play against each other.
Again.
In a playoff series. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
right.
They did last year.
That's a good point.
Can DJ Khaled sing? You said he's saying Bell Biv DeVoe.
He's just a hype man. He doesn't produce or sing. He just ad libs.
I know, but what was he doing for Bell Biv DeVoe? Just like, hey.
Just the point.
Oh, yeah, because, yeah, I'm just wondering. He gets it. He just gets it no matter what. He's got the Miami Heat. He's got the invite no matter what. He's there.
Yeah.
Doing it.
He's the best.
Yeah.
Let's do another round of winners. Task, go back to you. Who you got?
Well, the Pistons and Wizards made a minor trade. It's a minor trade, but I think it's a win-win trade.
Okay,
so the Wizards get Marvin Bagley, Isaiah Livers, and 2 second-round picks from the Pistons. The Pistons get Danilo Gallinari and Mike Muscala. All right, so
what a blockbuster.
Yeah, it's not much, but I say the Pistons they're horrendous, obviously, this year. And I think they're pulling the plug a little bit. This is the beginning. This is not going to put them over by any means. But it's going to take more than just one move. But the Pistons have about $60 million free now when it comes to free agency. This summer, they have about $60 million available because, if you remember, Marvin Bagley, they got for the Sacramento Kings a couple of years ago, and they signed him to a three-year deal, and he was signed through next season. The only contract of all these guys in the trade that is guaranteed next season. So they're pulling the plug. They're saying, all right, we're not paying anymore. After that three-year contract they gave Marvin Bagley, which obviously hasn't worked out. And they didn't want to pay Isaiah Livers, who's, you know, struggled shooting this season. And so they said, all right. But I don't think they're done. We've got 3.5 weeks left till the trade deadline. They've got Bojan Bogdanović. So if a team wants a guy who can shoot, he's available, I'm sure. Danilo Gallinari, I'm sure, as well, just to plug onto on the bench. Or if you want a Moose, Mike Muscala as well. But anyways, there's that. And then the Wizards, they get Bagley. They're going to try him out. He's not been amazing this season. He's been okay. And then they're going to try out Isaiah Livers, who is, you know, a wing sort of defender. He's shot okay in the past, but not this year. And he's played with Jordan Poole before at Michigan. So maybe, you know, maybe they're copying the Jalen Brunson.
For the Wolverines.
Yeah, that's right.
They're copying what the Knicks did with Jalen Brunson and Josh Hart. Let's get some guys together. Maybe if anybody can pull Poole back into the pool just to get things right, maybe it's Isaiah Livers. And they got 2 second-round picks for Gallinari and Muscala, who they got when they dealt Porzingis. So it's a win, I think, for the Wizards to just try something out with Bagley and friends. But anyways, it's minor. The Pistons ain't done. I don't think they're done. And they have, again, they have a lot of money. Does anybody want to play in
Detroit? That's the question, yeah. They open up all this cap space for who?
Well, yeah. Like we saw last season, we saw what happened with Fred VanVleet.
Yeah, the Rockets.
The Houston Rockets had free cap space.
Yeah.
They went and paid the man a lot. And Dylan Brooks.
Yeah.
They paid a lot. So I think there are chances. Now, the free agency crop is okay. Pascal Siakam is currently available. He would be phenomenal on any team. If the Pistons want to offer the max, who knows?
Right.
Who knows? But from there, you want to pay Toby. Tobias Harris is potential.
he might be available.
Yeah. I love this trade going down over the weekend because we were like talking about it in Slack. Okay, hey, we'll just slot it into winners and losers of the NBA weekend. And I was fascinated to see if it was going to be a winner, which Tass ultimately went with, or a loser. Because you can also turn around, especially the Pistons side of things, go, they dealt 2 second-round picks and Trey Lyles, who's actually like a contributing basketball player, for Bagley at the deadline, 2 years ago. And then they gave him that 3-year, like $38 million deal when it felt like nobody else was offering any sort of money like that for Bagley. So they sort of, you know, bet against themselves. And then Troy Weaver turns around and trades Bagley, gets out of the final year of his contract, but has to attach 2 more second-round picks. I mean, just brutal move, I think, overall when you zoom out. But yeah, they shed a little more money. They have more money to throw around to maybe someone. And whether that'll be the right decision, we'll see. Like, throwing max money or near max money at, like, Tobias Harris. Siakam a little different. Still older, though. That's probably what they're going to do.
Well,
probably what they have to do when you win 3 games. Like, they're on pace to win 6 games this year.
Yeah, I call it a winner because the Marvin Bagley contract did not work.
No.
So they're pulling the plug on that. At least they said, hey, we screwed up. And also, it sure feels like they're not going to pay James Wiseman at all.
Well, yeah, they traded Sadiq Bey for that.
Yeah, they messed up there. So I think they look back at the last few years and say, all right, we got to clean this thing.
Their next move should be for Troy Weaver not to be GM. That seems like their next move. It should be their next move. Probably won't be. Because he does not have a good track record right now over these last couple of years.
No, he's done bad. He's done a bad job. He traded one center here for 2 more centers. I love it. I love it. Just keep bringing in centers. I'm with you, Skeets. I think there's no reason the Pistons should be trading picks of any sort right now. They're obviously going to try and pull a Rockets over the summer, sign some high-character veterans, probably overpay them. They're going to be used a lot as leverage, absolutely, over the summer. But yeah, these are some guys that you've heard of. They got traded for each other.
Yeah, and they might try and, you know, I guess get back some more draft capital, be it second-round picks or stuff like that. Like you said, Gallinari, Bogdanović, you know, Joe Harris maybe, Alec Burks maybe. You know, these are guys that maybe teams talk themselves into throwing a you know, a second round pick or two at to try and acquire at the deadline here. I could see that. So maybe they, you know, gets a little bit more in the cupboards there. But yeah, overall, Troy Weaver, I don't know what he's doing. It's bad. It's really bad. Like when you go look through the moves that he's done recently. But we got a deal. We got a trade.
I was like, oh, interesting. The Pistons are trying to get some shooting here. And then I went and looked, and Danilo Gallinari shooting 31% from three. And that's much better than Muscala, who's at 27%.
Yeah.
What happened to these guys?
I know. Yeah. You imagine
what
those guys?
To these former Hawks?
Oh, do you imagine being those guys? Like they find, hey, guys, come here. I think it happened. Or I guess that was Detroit telling their guys that they were being dealt. But like, imagine telling Gallinari and Muscala, who are on the Wizards, who aren't much better than the Pistons, like,
right.
Hey, guys have been moved here. Really appreciate you all your support and your, you know, being veterans on this squad. And they're like, probably in their mind, they're like, yeah, all right, where are we going? Where are we getting rerouted to? You're going to the Pistons. Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? You're going from a team that's got, what, 7 wins to a team that's got 3 wins? Oh.
I think they both know that they're not going to be there for long.
No, I mean, they might that's be buyout right. guys, too.
Like, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Gallinari, can we get a second-round pick for this guy? They're going to try.
Yeah.
Gallinari started all right. I saw him hit some shots, but things have gotten a little bit colder.
I think these two teams played together today.
Today, yep.
Yeah, the Pistons and the Wizards.
But they are not going through their physicals, so they're not playing, all those
okay.
dudes.
All right, well, don't tune into that
doesn't
one,
feel
then.
Like it. No.
Trey, who else you got for a winner?
I got LaMelo Ball as a winner. He's back. Hadn't played since November 26th, basically since Thanksgiving, dealing with some injuries. He came back, played a couple of games over the weekend, one against the Spurs, in which the Hornets got completely destroyed, lost by 36, but LaMelo went for 28 points, 3 rebounds, 5 assists, 5 steals, lost again on Sunday, we talked about it earlier, to the Miami Heat. You're not expecting them. Maybe they should have been at least close against the Spurs. I mean, 36. A lot of blowouts going on right now. I'm just happy to see LaMelo is back. And most importantly for him, he gets to show off his neck tattoo. The NBA basically reversed their decision. They were having him. They said they had weeks of discussion with LaMelo about covering up this LF tattoo on his neck. They made him put a bandage over it.
Yep.
He was playing with like a big black just piece of tape on his neck through the first 17 games that he played this season. But apparently, over his time off, they had some more discussions, and now he's allowed to display that LF on his neck, which is good for him, I suppose. And honestly, the right move from the league. It's the guy's middle name. It is also the name of his clothing brand, but I don't think that like people are like, whoa, LF on LaMelo Ball's neck? I got to go see what that stands for. And then they go to see what happened. But he can have his neck out, and he's playing basketball right now. And all I want is for LaMelo Ball to play more than 36 games. That's how many games he played last year. He's only played 17 so far this season. I hope he stays healthy for the second half of the season, because that's at least a highlight festival.
Yeah, I think the general rule is, don't throw a brand name on your body. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the rule. That's the old rule. But I think they're allowed to modernize a little bit. But still, I think it's going to be case by case. Like, you just can't throw a Louis Vuitton on your knee because they're advertising for you. You know, it's that kind of thing that's happened in the past.
Yeah, right.
Like, people have gone up to Rasheed Wallace and said, hey, can you advertise Skittles on your arm? Or something. It was something like that. I'm making that up. But there was some candy out there. But it is going to be a case-by-case thing. I think with LaMelo, LaFrance is fine. I think that's fine. but it's just like we're going to talk about load management. In the beginning, they thought one way, and the other, now they want to push it the other way. So the same thing goes with these rules. It's case-by-case.
It's just so silly. Like, you see LaMelo with a giant black Band-Aid. I remember he had the bright blue there for a couple games too, and you're like watching it going like, what the hell's under there? And then you're right, Trey, then you're Googling, well, what's under there? Like, that's got to be something crazy.
It's
what's
good
he
for
got
sales. I think it worked out.
Yeah, exactly. It's like actually makes it worse if that was the whole point, that you can't have that brand on there. Who cares? It's good he's back. I'm with you. Hopefully he plays. Not that it's resulted in any sort of more wins here. We incredibly still have a bit of a race in the Nut Dust Bowl here between the No Dunks guys, between my Wizards, between Trey's Hornets, and between Tass's Pistons, who are obviously coming up in the rear here, but still, 1 week, you know, one good week for Detroit. You know, 2 wins in a week, and we got a hell of a race.
Give us a 2-win month, Detroit.
Yeah.
That would be amazing. Maybe back in the race easily.
Yeah. So it's not over. Yeah. It's not over.
It's
despite
not over.
Your team having 3 wins.
That's right.
Wow.
Yeah, because they've had a lot of close losses, like the one this weekend to the Rockets. They went to
overtime. Won that game.
Yeah.
Oh, they're better. God.
Yeah. They've done some good things in losses.
Final winner of the weekend to NBA All-Star Weekend content. Here's what I mean by that. Shams over the weekend told us that the NBA is finalizing plans for the Clippers to host the 2026 All-Star Weekend at Steve Ballmer's new Intuit Dome. That's the one with all the shitters, everyone. So you won't be standing in line at All-Star Weekend if you got to take a dump. There's a million toilets in this place. So now we have, obviously, Indy and the Pacers for 2024 coming up here soon. San Francisco and the Warriors for 25. And then it sounds like it's going to be L.A. and the Clippers on track for 2026. So after all of these like cold weather spots that we've had the last couple of All-Star Weekends, we're going to have two really there back-to-back in 25 and 26 in San Francisco and in L.A. Not a surprise. You build a new stadium, you'll generally get an All-Star Weekend.
Exactly right. I'm excited. Short flight to Hawaii from both San Francisco and L.A. Just saying. You know, post-game.
Wow.
And I don't know about you, Skeets, but when I travel, I have a hard time doing a number two.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
But I'm going to make sure it happens at All-Star 2026.
Yeah.
I'm locking it in.
Well, yeah, I joked on Twitter that we could have a challenge where we try and go to every toilet in the arena. Not maybe actually go, but
while being filmed.
Maybe go look at it. Yeah. Like count them. We should count them.
Bring cameras in there. Good idea.
Yeah, you want camera work. Yeah.
Well, I assume there are individual stalls, so you can go in by yourself.
I hope so. Yeah, it's true. I forgot to mention, no stalls. All the toilets,
we
no
got
stalls.
2,000 crappers in this dome, but we forgot to build walls between them all. It's just one big room. It's like that weird room when you would go to the cabin or cottage, that attic room where there's 20 beds, and they're all in one room. That's what we did at the Intuit Dome. Just all shitters. In other All-Star Weekend news, this is sort of fun. The Indianapolis Airport, they installed a full-court basketball court in their airport to celebrate, obviously, All-Star Weekend, which is, again, a couple weeks here. What do we think of this? I know some people are very pissed off. You can't play on it.
it's just a
walk-through. Like, there's not a rack of balls that people going through the airport can just like shoot around and stuff like that.
But what if you packed a ball?
I know. I think they would tell you to stop, but
you get one shot up.
Exactly. You absolutely would. Now, a lot of jokes about this. I saw Sean Yu on Twitter saying, imagining a world where group one plays group five to 21 to see who boards first. Okay?
I love it.
Love that. I saw somebody else write, before a flight, you can challenge a first-class passenger for their seat. Fantastic idea. Also, a lot of people say, imagine getting on a plane just drenched with a bunch of people who have been running it back for hours. But pretty cool looking, and they just keep it there all the time. And you should be able to shoot around.
It looks to me, I mean, it's just a picture, but from the picture, it looks like people aren't sure if they know that they're allowed to walk on it, right?
Yeah, I think you're right.
Can I cross this?
I mean,
is that okay?
You see they have, like, the little ropes or whatever, like, around the basket. I guess they just don't want you to climb it? I don't know.
But yeah, the rope.
The stanchion.
Yeah, it's blocked just at the stanchion, so it feels like you can just shoot it up
if
you want. So why not?
So bring your own ball. BYOB.
Yeah.
To the Indy Airport.
Yeah. I'm sure they're going to start selling balls right there.
I mean, that'd be...
That place there that sells food, I'd rather sell balls. I think they're going to make more money there. I just saw that place. I don't want to eat there. I want to buy a ball from there, though.
Well, you're going to have to bring a ball, Tass. And we're going to All-Star Weekend in Indianapolis. And we have more details, but there will be a live show. We're 99% sure there will on Friday night. We will have details to come, but if you are going to be in the area or planning to go for All-Star Weekend, you know, keep that Friday night open for a little No Dunks live show in Indianapolis. Can't wait. All right, let's take a break. And when we come back, NBA Weekend Losers.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
All right, to everybody joining us live right now on YouTube, take a second, hit that like button, and just make sure you have subscribed to No Dunks as we get closer and closer to 100,000 subs. We're very close to 95,000, so we're getting there. We might do this before All-Star Weekend, so thank you for playing your part. Okay, let's get to NBA Weekend losers. Trey, you get us started here. Who's your big loser from the weekend?
I had the Memphis Grizzlies as winners of the weekend last weekend.
Oh.
Now they're losers of the weekend because since then, we found out Ja Morant is going to be out for the season with shoulder surgery. Marcus Smart is out at least 6 weeks with a dislocated finger. And then on Friday, Desmond Bane rolled his ankle against the Clippers, stepped on Kawhi Leonard's foot. The team has announced that he's going to be out for at least 6 weeks. And let's just throw Jake LaRavia in there because he rolled his ankle too. He's out for 3 weeks as well. Reserve wing there for the Grizzlies. It is going to be a long month for Grizzlies fans if Bane and Smart are out for 6 weeks. They played against the Knicks on Saturday, started Xavier Tillman, Vince Williams, David Roddy, Luke Kennard, and Jacob Gilliard. In related story, they did not beat the New York Knicks with that starting lineup. This is a bummer, though. Like, everybody is getting hurt for the Grizzlies with significant injuries, right? Like, none of these have been 1 or 2 weeks where they're coming back quickly or maybe even surprising us with how quickly they're coming back. Steven Adams out for the season. Brandon Clark, they might as well just keep him out for the season at this point. Then obviously the ones that have happened this year. And that's a bummer because Bane has been having a pretty solid season. 25 points, 5 rebounds, 5 assists per game, 47, 38, and 86 shooting splits. He's had a lot more responsibility this year with Ja only being able to play a handful of games, with Smart struggling up until basically he went out with an injury. Bane has been the go-to guy. He's been a little overtaxed, but he's been pretty solid, and now it's just 6 more weeks without him. They're going to be tough to watch, and they are going to have a long month, but at least they'll get a good draft pick, and maybe they'll hit the lottery. Who knows?
Yeah, it stinks. Maybe they got to build a new stadium like Steve Ballmer. That's the only thing that's winning, I see, here. The sneaky Clippers thing that they did there, gave Kawhi the extension, then they started selling season seats immediately the day after. Then they announced the All-Star game. There's a reason for that, because obviously they didn't want fans going into this offseason saying, we lost in the first round. We're not going to buy season seats, but now Kawhi's there. Now the All-Star game's there. Things have changed. Unfortunately for the Grizzlies, yeah, it is time to just get bad. That's it. They necessarily just have to pull the plug.
Unfortunately,
on
they picked the wrong year to try and be really bad when we have 4 or 5 other teams that can barely win 10 games.
But you never know. You never know. In a lottery, anything
those
can happen.
Balls are bouncing.
They've got Derrick Rose on their team. That's what the Bulls got, number one pick. You know,
that's a great point.
That's true.
Great point.
It does feel like John Taffer walked into Memphis and just said, "Shut it down! Shut it down!" Because everybody is injured, and you know, Desmond Bane. I feel bad for him because he was going to be the classic when we were making All-Star picks. He was going to get some honorable mentions.
He was
going to be like, hey, look at the numbers this guy's putting up. He's playing really, really well, but you're not going to make it because the team stinks and there's so many good guards in the West and all that. He was going to get some nice what about this guy mentions, but you know, now he won't even get that because he'll be injured as the All-Star game is you know, being selected and being underway. So rough, rough year from the Grizzlies. I think we can pivot from them. Tass, who do you have for a loser?
Well, I have another team that should be pulling the plug, essentially. The Atlanta Hawks, because I feel like it's over in terms of the construction of this team working. It just doesn't seem like it at all. I'm not going quite Pistons. But, yeah, we watched them this past weekend. They got trucked, essentially, in 2 games. We've all been bamboozled. We all thought it was going to work with Trae Young and DeJounte Murray and DeAndre Hunter and then Jalen Johnson and then Clint Capella. It has not. The Hawks were pounded 126-108 by a Tyrese Haliburton-less Pacers team on Friday.
Right.
They got trucked. Indiana scored 28 points in the paint in the first quarter on Friday. How does that happen? 14 baskets in the paint because you're not playing defense at all. And then Washington on Saturday, in a back-to-back. This is Washington. This is not a good team. This is a team that's at the bottom, that has a far worse record than the Atlanta Hawks. And they just strolled into the lane as well. The Wizards won by 28 points. Points in the paint, 60-36. Again, they're one of the worst rebounding teams in the game. They out-rebounded the Hawks, no problem. The Hawks had a bad offensive night, something they're actually good at. They shot 34% from the field. They didn't score 100 points first time of the season. Blah, blah, blah. Anyway, Trae Young after the game, noting that they need a new roster and his head coach needs one. He said, quote, Quinn is such a cerebral coach and cerebral person. He needs time. He needs people in there who are going to listen and just give the effort that he says. That's essentially saying I need a new shooting guard beside me, because what Quinn Snyder did in Utah, if you remember, Donovan Mitchell had like a Royce O'Neal beside him. He had like guys who were playing defense beside him. And I think DeJounte Murray will be traded. I think the guy that's going to stay there is Trae Young. And essentially, they're just going to try to find defenders around him. People might say, well, I know they're 8 games under .500, but a few years ago in 2021, they were bad. Yes, you know, indeed, this yes. slow start, 14-20, they went to the conference finals. Well, yeah. And then the next year, 17-25, they went to the playoffs. And then even last year, started slow. They ended up taking a couple games from the Celtics in the playoffs, but they can't do it forever where they're just bad and then they're good. They're bad. They're... So I do think that there's going to be a trade, and it's going to be DeJounte Murray, because I think he's tasty for other teams because he's got such a long contract, depending on the roster, but it's a long contract that's sort of cheap for DeJounte Murray. So I threw some in the training machine there this weekend. I did it. I'm not so confident about them. I see Philly, if they want to do this, it's possible, but I would see the Hawks loving D'Anthony Melton coming back. Melton could be beside Trae Young. I say him first because I think that's the biggest part. It's D'Anthony Melton, Robert Covington, and maybe a first-round pick, maybe. I don't know. I could see him going to the Knicks for Quentin Grimes because the Hawks have liked him in the past. There was a rumor that they're going to trade him for Cam Reddish. And maybe Dante DiVincenzo. First-round pick? No, they're not going to include that. And then the Lakers, meh. Nothing too exciting there. So there's just nothing extremely exciting, I think, for the Hawks. No. But... You know, like with the Utah Jazz, and I said Royce O'Neal beside Donovan Mitchell, like that kind of guy. And I think D'Anthony Melton could be that kind of guy. We're just, listen, the offense is great. It's phenomenal this year. It's really, really good. So they just need, guys who try. To quote Trae Young, he just needs people who are going to listen and just give the effort. So the chemistry isn't there. And the DeAndre Hunter thing hasn't worked out. It's a little Pistons-like where they give guys contracts. Here you go. And unfortunately, they haven't lived up to the expectations. So that's why I think it's happening.
Yeah, DeAndre Hunter and DeJounte Murray were supposed to solve the defensive issues.
Yeah.
On the perimeter. They haven't. I mean, Hunter, you know, he can't play. He's never healthy. And he's not all that good. And then DeJounte Murray was the real one where it was like, yeah, we all thought it made sense. And he's gotten to be a little bit worse. Obviously, I think part of it being moved off of the ball a little bit, playing alongside Trae. But defensively, too. Doesn't look like elite on that level. This guy was making like an all-defensive team in San Antonio. And it's not the case here in Atlanta. So I'm with you. They need to do something. They need to trade. Everybody should be available to be traded outside of like Jalen Johnson, who looks like he could be something. And, you know, I guess you decide about the Trae Young of it all. Otherwise, everybody should be available to be got, I think. At where they are and how they play, it's sort of sad.
Yeah, exactly. And Tass is, you're saying they're good on offense. I agree, they're good, but they're not great. They're eighth. Like, that's fine, but they're just as close to 20th as they are to first, you know? They could be better, and I kind of think that's the way they should go. As long as Trae Young is the leader of the team, they're not going to play defense. That's just how it is. DeJounte Murray, he was a defense-first player. He comes and he sees the leader getting trucked every time, not giving an effort. Guess what? I'm not giving an effort either. Capella, he's like, I can't clean up for this the entire time. Quinn Snyder, Trae Young says he wants guys who listen and give effort. Trae Young has played harder on defense this year, but it's not enough. And obviously...
So you think they should just lean into like almost the Halliburton Pacers sort of idea of like, go all offense.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think it's too hard to build a defense around Trae Young's limitations, because then eventually you start playing all these defense-first guys who can't do anything on the offensive end, like a Capella, like John Collins at the end of his tenure here. A lot of stuff has changed around Trae Young in Atlanta. That's the only thing that hasn't changed yet. He is not on the block, but it's coming soon.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Summer, probably. They'll start talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do think they just need guys that buy in a little bit more. I mean, they have dropped down a little bit offensively, but they were pretty good until recently where they were like top five for a while. It's like Steph in Golden State to try and copy what they do there. Steph isn't the best defender, but he tries hard enough, and Trey's picked it up this year.
But Trey is not Steph offensively.
No, but they've been they've been like ranked like second, third for a while, and sometimes I understand that it's not been good enough recently in the last few years, so things aren't tasting all that good. But I don't know. So is it time to give up on Trey is what the discussion is?
That'll be the question pretty soon. But, I mean, obviously, Trey is an offensive force. Like, the guy's 29 points, 11 assists a game. He might be starting the All-Star game this year. He can give you a good offense. But how many times can you keep trying to have a good offense and not having it be the best offense in the league? Levels, there's just levels to it, right? Like, you've seen what the makeover Halliburton has given the Pacers. Basically, right away, he came in and they became one of the best offenses in league history. Trae Young is in his sixth season at this point, and they're good. Fifth season, I think, maybe. And they're good, but they're not great. And they have not been great since he's been the guy. He shoots 42%. He doesn't shoot 50%.
I'm heading down to the Fortress here later today for a little Spurs-Hawks action. Get to see some Wemby up close and personal. I believe he's playing. I'm sure I'll see 20 to 22 minutes from Wemby. But, yeah, we'll see what type of effort we get from the Hawks here. Knowing them, they'll win by 25. They're an infuriating team. They're an infuriating – yeah, but they just lost to the Wizards, like you said, and got cooked by the Pacers without Halliburton. It's very bad right now. They're sort of hitting close to rock bottom on their season. They start to slide here in the standings and just the vibe around it all and obviously the trade rumors. And now we're even, rightfully so, discussing, hold on, is it Trae Young they should actually be moving here? Thank God for Jalen Johnson. He is the one lone bright spot, I would say, from this Hawks season that he actually got an opportunity, and he's played really well. Not that it's resulted in a ton of wins, but that's, you're not going to ask him to sort of carry a team at this point yet. But
no,
at least he looks like a keeper.
This team is 8 games under .500.
Yeah,
It's the bottom right now, unfortunately.
Loser of the weekend to the Portland Trailblazers. Here's why. They lost to the Suns last night, 127-116. Scoot had a good game. This was one good thing. Career high 33 points. He had 9 assists. But it was Portland's fourth straight loss. They've lost 7 of their last 8, 8 of their last 10. Now, they were really hurt by injuries, or illnesses, I should say, on Sunday. Maybe these guys are just sick of playing for their team. But Jeremy Grant, Matisse Thybulle, late scratches because of illness. So they had 8 players. And when I tell you the Blazers have one hell of a roster going, I am not lying. You sickos might know Dwapreeth. He plays, right? He's their starting center. And he's been okay at times. But you had Chris Murray, who's obviously the brother of Keegan Murray. He had 37 minutes off the bench last night for Portland. And then two guys that I would assume not a lot of people know of. Justin Manaya. I'm not even pronouncing his name right. Apologies. Manaya. He scored a single point in 17 minutes for the Blazers. Justin Manaya. And then they have a French shooting guard named Ryan Rupert. He hit a bunch of threes in the loss, but you're probably out there going, who are you talking about? Dwapreeth and Ryan Rupert and Justin Manaya? Like, these are guys that are getting, like, minutes, like, really opportunities because they're just so depleted and their season has gotten away from them. During their 7-game road trip, the Blazers lost by at least 21 points 6 times. These are not even competitive games. They're absolute just shellackings. Their lone win came against Brooklyn. It was in overtime. And Billups, after the road trip, said, just a tough trip, but it turned out to be even tougher than I thought it would. What? Man, when your head coach is saying that, like, we knew we'd probably go 1-6, but wow, I thought we'd at least have some more competitive games. We lost everything by about 20+, but it's just bad in Portland right now. That's it.
They've been under 100 points in 5 of their last 7 games. Right. That's hard to do in 2024.
Today's game, yeah, good point. So anyway, keep your eye on Ryan Rupert and Justin Manaya and Dwapreeth, who has one of the best names in the league. I'll give him that. Great name. But it's rough. These guys aren't playing in it. And you said about the Pistons and some of their moves they might make at the deadline here. Same thing could be said for the Blazers, of course, outside a few of their guys that are untouchable.
Yeah.
You know, are they really... They move in Brogdon, or they move in Time Lord, or they move in Grant is the big one, I guess.
DeAndre Ayton. I mean, they just it is odd because they just went for it with all those vets. That's a lot of vets with Brogdon, Robert Williams, DeAndre Ayton. So they kind of went. They thought they could balance both.
Yeah.
And if you want to get something for Brogdon, who's getting up there in age, it's probably time.
Quick other little round here. Anyone else for a loser of the weekend?
I got a big loser of the weekend, and it's the Bulls fans who booed Jerry Krause at their Ring of Honor ceremony. Embarrassing for all Bulls fans, classless from the people who did. There's lots of history that goes into why Jerry Krause would be booed. Kelly Dwyer had a great write-up on his Substack, The Second Arrangement. John Greenberg had a great one. For The Athletic, these are guys who like lived through the dynasty, and they know that Jerry Krause has been getting booed since before the Bulls were winning championships. Yeah. So it could have been expected that it was going to happen, which means to me the Bulls should have done something to kind of like do their best to make sure that it didn't happen, because it's a terrible look and embarrassing for the franchise to be booing a dead man. And then they cut to his widow sitting there in tears. You know, shout out to Ron Harper, came and comforted her right away as it was happening. Shout out to Stacey King. He spoke up as they came back to the third quarter, calling out the fans who were booing. Everything else was bad, though. And I don't know. It's just like I think Adam Amin said on the broadcast, like it just leaves a pit in your stomach.
Yeah.
And for me, that's exactly what it was. I was watching it live. I was not shocked that Jerry Krause got booed. Absolutely. But that's just not the time for it. Like, the guy's been dead for years at this point. He is a huge part of Bulls history. The way it ended with Jerry Krause and the Bulls obviously has colored the way things have gone ever since. But this is a time when you can just cheer because you're honoring the greats of the franchise for the first time, putting them all in the Ring of Honor. So it's the kind of thing that's going to stick with Bulls fans. Like, it'll get brought up all the time. Like, Eagles fans booing Santa Claus a million years ago. It'll just keep getting brought up. The Bulls will do another Ring of Honor in 2026, and that's what people will be talking about. So it was a terrible look, and, you know, the Bulls are taking a lot of hits for it. Rightfully so.
Yeah, extremely unfortunate. I do appreciate how everybody sitting beside Thelma, Jerry Krause's widow, did go support her, and also Steve Kerr, who was there, you know, with the Warriors, spoke out about it later on, saying how bad he felt that they've essentially been booing Jerry Krause for, you know, 40 years almost, since the mid-80s almost. And they just keep going, and they just don't understand that there's no need for that. Why it started and why it's become such a habit of these fans, obviously unfortunate, but it's way past. And I'm sure they watched The Last Dance and saw Jerry Krause in there and how he was made fun of, the jokes there, but really the man has passed, and yeah, there's absolutely no need for that. It should have just been a celebration moment.
It was a very tough watch. It's one of these things I saw going around Twitter, and you're like, you see the headline, like, of course the Bulls fans booed Jerry Krause, and I'm like, okay, what's the big deal? And then you see the clip and you're like, oh my god, it's worse than I thought, right? When you read what it is, because of the booing him in general is sort of a little weird, like you said, Trey. It's like, okay, maybe just don't do anything if you really don't love the guy. It is like a Ring of Honor celebration here with all these other Bulls legends. But then to cut to Thelma, who's sitting there visibly upset by it all, was like, oh, your heart went out for her. So, yeah, and going to be tough to shake this, no doubt. That's one of these things that just, like, sticks to a franchise, sticks to a fan base, right or wrong. It is what it is. And people booed her. There was a lot of boos there. I do feel like it was one of those things, like, hey, we boo this guy all the time. Here we go, boos, because his photo's up on the Jumbotron or whatever. And then it did cut to Thelma, and I felt like there was some, like, pullback of the boos, but it was too late. It was like, okay. But anyway, moving on from that. That's a loser of the weekend, no doubt. Final loser of the weekend. Interested to hear your take on it, guys, whether or not you think it is. The league released a long-awaited report on load management this weekend. David Aldridge at The Athletic, great article on this. Chief among the findings in this 57-page report was, quote, resting healthy players for a game to help prevent future injuries doesn't make those players less susceptible you know what I'm trying to say, to future injury than players who aren't rested for games. End quote. So, and hold on, scratch that. It actually says, historically, they don't have sound evidence demonstrating that load management through reduced game participation reduces injuries. But to be clear, they also lack evidence that load management fails to reduce injuries. So they just don't have the evidence that it is real. But this is a big 180 here from the league on the idea of load management, which we talked about for years. And Silver was always saying, yeah, the teams, man, The data backs it up. Mm-hmm. They've gone through this. It actually makes sense to rest these guys and back-to-back situations and 3 and 4 nights and reduce minutes and all that. And now this report that has like 10 years worth of data, they're like, no, it actually doesn't show that at all. At least the evidence doesn't show it. I have this as a loser of the weekend. I really just wanted to address it. What do you think? What do you make of all this?
When Adam Silver first talked about it years ago, he basically said there is evidence. If you look at the medical reports, there is evidence that sitting out will help your career in the future. So I feel like I have been bamboozled. unfortunately, basically what's happening is the TV deal is beginning in a couple months. The talks between the NBA and everyone begins in March. And so I think that's what this is all about. This is all about just trying to get a reputation back of the league that guys don't sit for any reason. So that's what this is about, just to be able to sell every single game, to be able to sell 82 games for as much as possible. But it's, I guess there are medical reports in this particular article and why they reversed their view about it. I think it's just hard to prove that it helps people's careers, but I think it does. but it is just a difficult thing to prove. So really it just feels like nothing to read about here. And it's really what it comes down to is they should just be playing fewer games in general so that we don't have to play back-to-backs or give guys rest. Again, I think that's what it comes down to.
10 years worth of data says missing games for rest or load management does not reduce future injury rates. Schedule density, including back-to-backs, does not impact future injury rates. And playing a high number of minutes or even games does not impact future injury rates. Which, you're right. I mean, for years, Silver in the league was saying the opposite. They were preaching strong data from NBA teams. You know, load management, it does help prevent future injuries. But now they're saying the opposite, that, you know, this report says the opposite.
Yeah, and they're basically saying, we were just listening to the teams. We had all of our own data. We just hadn't really looked into it yet, but I don't know. It's just weird. I like the quote that says, this doesn't prove that load management doesn't work, but it really calls into question the conventional wisdom that it does. Really makes you think. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what they're doing here. They're just trying to muddy the waters, is what it seems like to me, because you're right, Tass. It's very hard to prove whether or not load management does or doesn't work to prevent injuries, especially you go and compare it to historical data for stars missing games when stars played a lot more games back in the 90s. But guess what? Everybody was skinnier. People weren't playing as hard on both ends of the ball in the 90s. Things have changed over the course of 30 years. The stress on your body's different too. So it's kind of hard to compare different generations of players as well. But I think what happened is the league at the beginning of the season said load management doesn't work, and everybody's like, wait a second, how could you possibly say that after years of saying it does work? So they had to come out with some kind of a report. It's not an independent report. It's somebody that the NBA paid. So, of course, they're coming out on that, their side. And it's interesting as a fan and as a commentator, right? Because you're like, on one hand, it feels like it does work, but also you like seeing the players play more often.
Right.
So what should it be? Should we be forcing them to play, or should we be reinterpreting the data so that they want to play more? I don't know, but players are playing more right now. That's good, I guess.
Yeah, and again,
I like watching basketball players play.
And I want to make this clear. We say this all the time when we talk about load management. This usually comes from the teams, physicians, their sports scientists, their front offices. They're the ones usually pushing the load management idea. It's less from the players. In fact, we get a lot of like low-key griping a lot from players. Like, you know, like, I'm healthy, I could play. Like, they want to play, I think. Generally, most of these guys have no issues playing most of the games. It's the teams trying to, like, prevent future injuries because, they're so important to their success and all that. You understand why. But, all of this under the umbrella. I say all of this. Now this new load management report saying, hey, it doesn't matter. You guys should play. That's not going to have any effect on whether you're injured. Stuff like obviously the in-season tournament and the play-in tournament and the evening of sort of the draft odds, so you don't want to lean into tanking. All of this is to like build up the regular season. Hey, this matters. This is all something here, guys. And wow, interesting timing of it all when you have huge negotiations for billions of dollars of television money and streaming money.
Yeah, they changed it up before this season. Was when the, hey, you got to play every single game rule came out, essentially. But really, when there haven't been a ton of sitting out, even this season. But when they do sit out, it's because they play back to backs. If we just eliminated those, if we just made the season 2 weeks longer, the guys wouldn't want to play back to backs. Guys say, literally, these are incredible athletes that say that flying somewhere and playing the day after is just, it's just taxing. You know, whether or not they get healthy or can stay healthy is different, but they obviously don't feel good, and obviously guys are still going to get hurt, so it doesn't really...
Yeah.
And that's why it's difficult to prove, because there's always going to be injuries in this sport.
Yes.
Regardless of how many games are played. But
so that, really, I mean, the back-to-backs are killer. What's happened, though, the pendulum swung so far one way, it was like, so what? You're tired. You're paid pretty handsomely to be a little tired in the second game of a back-to-back after your private flight. That's what people were saying, and I think there's some truth to that. And again, a lot of the players would want to play, but it was like, what are you doing, teams? Like, you know, and then we get in the situation where obviously Curry's not playing in Cleveland, and this family of four has spent all this money. And here's the other thing. The league sells this league on players. That's what they do. So then you can't turn around and say, well, no, the star players aren't actually playing. Well, that's how you sell this league. That's what they've done for years, and it's worked. It's Curry versus LeBron. It's not usually the Warriors versus the Lakers, right? So yeah. That's where it's like you can't. That's tough. That's a tough pill to swallow, I think. And why they're now are pivoting back maybe somewhere to where, yeah, you should want to play and these guys should play.
Yeah,
outside of injuries.
Yeah. Again, it's right before TV deals are negotiated, so that's why they're doing it. But if back to backs were safe to play, then why don't we have them in the postseason? They don't. They play games every second day.
Yeah.
So why don't they just play back to backs in the playoffs? Just play back to backs. Come on, they play baseball every day in the playoffs. Yeah. Just do it. You know why?
Right.
Because it's not safe, and because guys, they don't want to play the second day. They don't. So they just have to get rid of back to backs in the regular season. That's what they do. I think that should be the first and foremost thing. But it is making the season longer if you continue to play 82 games, and maybe they don't want to do that because people won't watch as many games in general. So maybe that hurts the TV deals, but. Anyways, I think what they did this year, as you said, guys are playing. Guys are playing games this season. There have been some games that are set out, but they aren't national TV games. Why? Because they scheduled them like that to make sure that they weren't part of back-to-backs. They did that so we could get a good TV deal. Yeah.
They're saying be selective when you rest your guys.
Yeah.
Watch out if it's a nationally televised game. Watch out if it's on the road, like all this stuff.
But they know that they're going to sit back-to-back games, and that's happened. Anthony Davis has sat them out. Obviously, Chris Middleton sits them out a ton. There's still some guys. Mm-hmm. But there's a way. There's a way.
Anyway.
Play every second day.
Highly encourage you, if you have an athletic subscription, to go read Aldridge on the report, breaking it all down. Got some quotes in there.
I gotta get something off my chest. Nothing drives me crazier than sending a message to a group chat and getting no response. That's why I'm a big emoji responder. Love a hang loose hand or a salute, but man, it hurts when you send a message and get nothing back. Ouch! We all carry around different stressors, big and small. When we keep them bottled up, it can start to affect us negatively. Therapy is a safe space to get things off your chest and to figure out how to work through whatever's weighing you down. Therapy isn't just for those who've experienced major trauma. It's helpful for learning positive coping skills and how to set boundaries. It empowers you to be the best version of yourself. If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/NoDunks today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp.com/NoDunks. This episode of No Dunks is brought to you by BetterHelp.
If you're as obsessed with basketball as I am, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Hey guys, this is JJ Redick. Twice a week, I'm cooking up something special for basketball junkies on my podcast, The Old Man and the Three. I bring on guests in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, like Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, or Paulo Banchero on his shooting workouts with Kevin Durant, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron when they were teammates in Miami. But it's not just about the player interviews. Every Monday, I break down the top three things happening around the NBA without the outlandish takes. Often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler, we dive deep into topics like rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is meme mugging now a tech? The Old Man and the Three is the only companion podcast you'll need during the playoffs this year. Be sure to listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, let's get to Tweet of the Night.
Tweet of the Night. Wow.
Twitter.
Tweet of the Night comes from a man named at Jack M. Sully. I saw this tweet and I said, huh, that's a good tweet here, Jack. Detroit has been hogging the spotlight. But the bottom five teams in the league, the Pistons, plus the Blazers, the Hornets, the Spurs, and the Wizards, are just as historically bad. We need a good nickname for that group. I like that, Jack. You know, we can like do a crowdsourcing here on a potential nickname for these really bad five teams. I very quickly this morning came up with some suggestions. I'm not saying these are good, but I'll chuck them at you guys. Maybe you like one more than the other. Maybe you have your own. The Bad News Ballers. That one won't stick. I like this one more. The Soggy Bottom Boys.
I mean, if you're a fan of this team, you are a fan of constant sorrow.
Okay, it works. You know how, like, in soccer we get the groups and everyone goes, ooh, when it's really elite, it's like the group of death? What about just the group of actual death? We call it that. They're all that bad. The 14%? Because like your best chance at a number one pick. Now that's only the top three. Then it goes down a little bit. But anyway, the 14%, maybe something there. And then I wanted something that rhymed a little bit. So how about the Deprived Five?
There's a couple there.
There is some work there, yeah, for sure.
But we do need something. Right now it seems like the Soggy Bottom Boys is the clubhouse leader.
Bad News Ballers. Got the biggest pump.
Bad News Ballers. Okay. Maybe I went too quickly past that one.
There's a few.
Okay.
I think this is a good poll for people out there.
Yeah.
There's some takers.
How about the Dusters?
For us,
our nut dust teams here.
Bottom of the baggers.
The bottom of the bag. That's not bad either.
Bottom of the bag is pretty good, especially in the no-dunks world.
Yeah, that's crazy to see. Like, the Grizzlies have had a really tough season. They've had so many injuries. They're only 13-26. They've got a bad point differential, -5.33. And they are 4 points better than the Spurs at -9. And then, you know, -9 for the Wizards, the Blazers, and then -11 for the Pistons and the Hornets. But, you know, I guess the Pistons are probably happy looking at that because they are not last in point differential. It's the Hornets.
Wow. That's, the Hornets, I think, have lost 16 of their last 17. Like, again, what a year for you to be shitty, because it can just, like, totally go under the radar thanks to Detroit and their epic losing streak and how they only have three wins out of 39. Like, I mean, when will it really ramp up that the Pistons might set the all-time record here? When do you think people start really taking notice? Like, after the All-Star break?
After the All-Star
March
break.
March, maybe? If they still have four wins? People are going to be like, whoa, it's in play here. Because what's the worst? 9 for an 82-game season, but then the
7
Bobcats?
7 for the 66-game season? Is that right?
I think that's right.
Is that right? Yeah. I don't know. They're on a 7-game losing streak right now after snapping the streak against the Raptors and then hopping right back on another one. I wonder if they get to a second 10-game losing streak, like back-to-back, if that starts putting even more eyeballs on the Pistons. Mm. We'll see. Well, they got the Wizards tonight. I mean, that's a big game.
That is a huge
that's
game.
That's a big game in the Dust Bowl.
Oh, it's a massive
that's
game.
That's huge.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Monty Williams this weekend said, I should be questioned because I haven't played Jaden Ivey enough. And they're going to play Jaden Ivey. Yeah, he's going to beat the Wizards.
That's fair. Yeah. it's not like you're winning games and he's buried on the bench.
Yeah.
You may want to play him. May want to give it a go. Crazy. All right, let's call it there, guys, here on a Monday. Winners and losers of the NBA weekend. I'm sure we missed some. You tell us. Let us know in the YouTube comments. You can tweet at us at NoDunksInc. Lots of games on today. I think they start at 1 o'clock, I want to say, the MLK Day action starts, and then there's like, you know, 2 o'clock and 3:30 and all throughout the day, some games on TNT. So enjoy the basketball, and we'll be back here tomorrow to talk about as much of it as possible, 10 a.m. Eastern. Until then, Clipper Bros.
You heard it here first. Have a great time. Turn up. Love you guys. Awesome.
Thanks for joining us, and remember, happy MLK Day.
Brace the day, people.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10. Place your first bet on any game and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.